Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari America, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
NFL podcast, the Monday version. Yeah, people normally are used to this voice on the Tuesday edition, but Joe Bartle filling in for Jeff Erickson, Chris Liss alongside me. This is my video debut of the podcast, so we'll see how that goes. Before we get into the Week 15 slate, word from our sponsors, BetMGM. Sports bettors know that magic happens when you turn a hunch into action and apply the right amount of expertise. That's why BetMGM has teamed up with RotoWire to offer new BetMGM customers a free six-month RotoWire subscription when they place their first bet. Register on the BetMGM app or website and use promo code ROTO, that's R-O-T-O, to claim your first subscription. Once you make your first sports wager, you'll receive a season's length of RotoWire's unmatched sports insight. Find out why BetMGM is the king of sports by signing up and, well, king of sports books, by signing up and placing your first bet today. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditioning. 21 years or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, Tennessee, and West Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly, and if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia. In Tennessee, call or text the red line at 800-889-9789. Or if you know somebody or you yourself has a gambling problem, wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional code offer not available in Nevada. Okay. All right. So it's week 15 now in the books for the most part. We still have the Monday night game to go on, which should be a stinker, I'd imagine, right? Steelers, Bengals. Are you that excited for that list?
No, I'm not really excited for it. You know, it's funny because I, for the night game, since I'm in Portugal, I don't stay up till 4 a.m. So I watch the 40-minute edited version of those games the next morning, which is nice because it saves me time. I mean, think about it. Like, if you're watching them live, you watch three games a week, Sunday, Thursday, and Monday. That's 10 hours. Right. And I'm doing it in 2 hours, 40, 40, and 40. So I save 8 hours of my time that's completely wasted by most other people that watch football. But with games like this and like the Giants game this morning, even the 40-minute version is tough. It's boring. I'm like, just hurry this up. It's boring. And I'm not even watching commercials or replay reviews or huddles or any of that. It's just like, this is a bad product. So you never know. I mean, you never know. Sometimes they surprise you, but I'm not expecting much.
Yeah, it's unfortunate you're favorite team had such a dismal outing. I don't know. It kind of felt expected when it was Colt McCoy under center, but Daniel Jones didn't have a great game last week either. It just feels like that's where the offense is kind of stagnated for the Giants these past 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Jones is playing hurt, right, and he's played well in stretches, and he has, like, the physical skills, but I don't know if mentally or just feel-wise he has it as a quarterback. Like, you look at Jalen Hurts coming in, he just has that feel for the game. You can just see it. I mean, you see the guy has a feel. He just knows kind of when to take off, when to throw into coverage, when to eat it and take a sack, when to throw it away. He's just very instinctive, and Daniel Jones just seems a little – he's got all the physical skills, but he doesn't have the instincts. And then, of course, you lose Barkley, and you're dealing with, like, substandard running back. You know, Alfred Morris is getting a lot of carries. And then, you know, Evan Engram sucks. Another ball went off his hands. That guy's just like, I don't even know why, you know, they just keep trying to throw to him. And then, you know, the line, Andrew Thomas did a decent job against Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett got a late sack, but for the most part, he held up pretty well. The defense is fine. It's pretty good, actually. They didn't have James Bradbury. They didn't get torched, but you know, they just need to. It's really unfortunate that Jones is hurt, because this is the time they needed to make a final decision on him, and now whatever decision they make is going to be a little incomplete. They'll either kick him to the curb, which is probably makes the most sense, but I think there's still some skill there, and he's played behind a horrible offensive line, so that. You never know if he could do well behind a good one. Or they'll stick with him too long because they won't draft a quarterback, which is also a problem. You really need to find out. That's, like, incredibly valuable, and the injury was very ill-timed for that reason. So, yeah, it was a horrible game. And, the Giants, I think they have good, like, defensive line, good secondary with Bradbury. They have good – they could have a better offensive line if Andrew Thomas develops. They have Slayton and Shepard. There's some pieces there, but they need a lot of work.
Where are you personally at? Like, are you on the Giants should draft another quarterback train?
Yeah, okay. I think so, probably. I would have liked to give Danny Dimes the last few games to sure. You know, yeah. Prove that wrong. But knowing what I know now, he started enough. I mean, look at Jalen Hurts. He had two starts, and I'm already sold. You look at most of these guys, they're just good from the get-go. You know, Herbert was good right away. You rarely have a guy play this long and you're unsure. Now, he did have terrible conditions, and conditions are huge, right? You'll see Matt Ryan look amazing, Matt Ryan look terrible. You'll see a lot of good quarterbacks, depending on conditions, look great or terrible. And so if a guy's in bad conditions, you can be fooled and think he's worse than he is. But I think balance of what I've seen, some of it's been his fault, and he's a great athlete, but I would probably move on.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the conditions part of it. I think of, like, Tua Tagovailoa, right? He's doing fine enough with the Dolphins right now, and he has similar, if not worse, conditions than Daniel Jones when he entered the league. You mentioned Justin Herbert, well, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and Hunter Henry Eckler. That's a pretty great stable of guys available. I don't know. I'm with you on that. And we had talked on SiriusXM Friday, I think, about Jalen Hurts, and you were right. I mean, you were confident in your analysis of him or assessment of him that he was a pretty good player, and I was saying, let's just – roll it back a little bit. I think I'm all in now after two games, because that was another impressive performance for him.
I look great. I saw the Saints game. I watched the whole game. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of, you know, so this is an interesting topic, because Rufus Peabody, who is a professional bettor, he puts tens of thousands of dollars on games based on his own systems and beliefs about this stuff. So he's got way more skin in the game than I do. I just talk shit on radio shows and podcasts, and I bet a tiny bit of my money that is insignificant. It's not the basis of my livelihood. So, you know, you should listen to him. But we got into it because I had the Eagles as my best bet. Unfortunately, they didn't cover because Zach Ertz was subbing in for the punter as the holder, and they botched an extra point, but they would have covered. But I don't think that's the point. I said to him, the reason I like the Eagles is because I think Jalen Hurts is just such a difference maker for them over Wentz. And he did not move his number very much based on Hurts over Wentz, because he said, look, a guy typically in his second career start is not an even close to an average quarterback. So he bets the base rate. The base rate is what usually happens. What usually happens is a guy in start two just isn't a big plus at the position. So then he graded the Eagles as a team, including their quarterback, as lower than I did. But I feel like, you know, I feel, even though I lost the bet and he actually won it, I feel like at least in that respect, I was right. And and he would never say he's always going to be right, because the base rate's not always right. It's just usually right. But I guess the way I would put it is that I think he was using the wrong base rate. Because if you just say generic guy in start two, then he's absolutely correct about the base rate. But if you say guy in start two who beat one of the best defenses in the league in start one convincingly, okay, now we're looking at something else. And we see this logic all the time. I remember one time after Mike Trout had his ridiculous rookie year, there was like a piece written that was like, he's never going to repeat this. It's so unusual. And he gave all his reasons for why players just don't do this at this age with this blah, 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 this, you know. And I was like, yeah, the average player doesn't do this, right? But players who do this now have to be considered very much not average players. Yeah. You know, if you were to say, okay, LeBron James, no way he's going to average 7 assists a game, you know, for 5 years. Nobody who's 6'9", 260 ever has 7 assists a game. Well, yeah, but the guy who does might be the greatest player of all time. I mean, it's, you know, you can't look at it as, well, this has never happened before. And Nassim Taleb has this thing. He's like, if you're a turkey for like the first, you know, 1,000 days of your life, life's great. My owner's so nice. He fattens me up. He gives me all the food. I do whatever I want. It's amazing. It's a great life. And then it's Thanksgiving of the year that you're up, you know, and you know, you could have you could be 1,000 for 1,000 correct on your assessment of the situation, but on day 1,001, it's all over for you. You're being fed to somebody. So, you know, we sometimes look at what the base rate is, but we're not taking into account all the variables, right? So like the base rate, yeah, in general is this, but, and then, you know, you get into the tricky part of how can you spot an exception to the base rate?
That's going to be my follow-up. Like what is the point, or like, how do you get to there? Because you can have your own assessments on players and it might be true or it might not be true. I think of Jared Goff very specifically, his very first year with Jeff Fisher as the head coach. He was awful, right? I mean, and I was pro Wentz all the way. I thought Wentz was the better quarterback of the two. It was ridiculous. Goff went number one overall. It looked like Wentz was going to be the home run hit. He was the MVP basically in his rookie season. Goff was non-existent. You flip it around with Sean McVay. Now Goff actually looks above average, and I have to kind of bite my tongue and pretend like he's good. And now we're sort of waffling in between whatever Goff is. So it's hard to identify, especially after only two games. That's where it's difficult to make the assessment that Jalen Hurts is the guy. Like, just because you saw what he did against the Saints, he's still the above-average player that Rufus Peabody might not think he is.
Right. And I could be wrong, right? Let's say Hurts is terrible for four games. Then I'm already, you know, oh, yeah, look, I was right about this. And then I end up being wrong about it. But every excellent game that he plays, and he had no interceptions, and he had 3 touchdowns and a rushing touchdown. I mean, he looked really good. And Arizona's pass rush has been pretty good the last couple of weeks. And comparing to Wentz is just night and day, the difference between the two, and playing behind that offensive line and getting Alshon Jeffrey involved. Remember, those stats don't even include the 4 PIs against Patrick Peterson. I mean, he moved the ball like crazy. But yeah, it could still change, obviously. And the question is, yeah, how do you know after one start or two that this is an exception to the rule? And I think that there's a couple of things, right? Like, so A, you have experience watching players, and you usually see guys like Danny Dimes who make a couple amazing throws, some nice runs, but then just look totally boneheaded. And that's the norm, right? Like, there's guys who are total stiffs that don't make any plays.
Right.
Which, you know, the Dwayne Haskins,
right?
Like, Dwayne Haskins, you know, Haskins and Josh Rosen. I mean, they barely, you know, they make a throw here and there, but it's like there's almost no bright spot. And then there's guys like Dimes and Sam Darnold who, they'll make occasional great plays, but there's just so many boneheaded mistakes, and that's usually what you're looking at. But sometimes you get a Jalen Hurts for his first couple games, or Deshaun Watson, or a Joe Burrow, or somebody, and I even think those two, Hurts and Watson, played better than Burrow even, that you're like, ooh, this guy's playing way over the normal, you know, level. And then, of course, pedigree matters. Like, Burrow's the first overall pick. Watson was an early first round. I mean, Jalen Hurts was the second rounder, so he gets dinged a little bit for that. But sometimes you just see it. And then also, you know, I think that something that people get wrong is that it's not just the size of the sample, it's the magnitude of the sample. So I always give this example to Jeff. Like, let's say I'm taking batting practice at Yankee Stadium. I decide at age 49 that I'm a prospect, and I convince some people to, I pay some people to let me audition for the Yankees to try out. And in batting practice, I hit a ball 600 feet, just one. Okay, it's only one ball. It's just a very tiny sample. But it went 600 feet. You know, the biggest home runs of the year hit by Stanton go like 500 feet, right. 505 right. feet. So I hit one 600 feet, just one. Well, I mean, it doesn't mean I would make the team, but they would be like, what the hell just happened? This guy's got power I've never seen in my entire. A sample of one would tell you a lot. It would tell you a lot. If I threw one pitch at 110 miles an hour, it's one pitch. Doesn't mean I can pitch in the big leagues, but it certainly means people are going to have an interest in seeing how replicable it is.
Okay.
And so I think that it's not just the size of the sample, it's the magnitude of the sample. So I had this other thing I used to put on Twitter. I'd say, would you rather have, just knowing nothing else about a player, a pitcher who struck out 200 batters in a season last year, or a pitcher and all you knew about him is he struck out 18 batters in one game? And everybody, or most people, the majority on Twitter voted for the big sample, 200 strikeouts in a season. Do you realize if you look at the list of pitchers who've struck out 18 batters in a game, it's a who's who of the all-time greats. It's like Randy Johnson. You know, I mean, it's Roger Clemens. It's like the greatest pitchers of all time. And there's like the scrubs are like Kerry Wood, who's still very, you know, yeah. Guys who struck out well more than 200 at their peak. So it's a mistake to go for sample over a large sample and not consider magnitude. So, you know what, and now, okay, the question of the magnitude of Jalen Hurts' game, I mean, there's a lot of scrubs. Billy Volek had some monster games. But
that's a blast from the past.
Yeah. But I don't even know if you were alive then. But point is that you have to have an eye to how big of a magnitude is it for this guy to play behind a terrible offensive line that Carson Wentz led the league in sacks, picks, fumbles, couldn't move the ball, crappy receivers. And this guy comes in against the Saints in a big game for them and just flat out crushes and beats the Saints. And then now the second game, to me, that's a big magnitude. And so, and he's a second round pick who dominated in college, put up the same numbers, you know, as
Kyler Murray,
in college. Right. So, I mean, yeah. Who's the number one overall pick. So
and Baker,
you start to, too, yeah. So you start to look at it and you're like, I'm going to say this is not the usual start to QB. And I, you know, and it just seems like, okay, that seemed pretty correct. Let's see start three. I think if someone's just going to regress him back to start a generic start three QB, now that's crazy. I don't think it was crazy for Rufus to have done that in start two.
Sure.
Because it was still a pretty small sample. The magnitude was big, but it wasn't. Now it's double the size. I mean, now the sample's double the size with the same magnitude.
400 total yards or close to it. 4 touchdowns, 330 in the air, 68 on the ground. Again, 4 total touchdowns. I agree with you. Oh, you talk about the like almost a historical anomaly that a 600 home run or 600 foot home run would be, or 110 mile per hour pitch on a 49 year old throwing it. I do kind of feel like Jalen Hurts doing what he did against the Saints defense fits that category. If only because I just watched the Saints defense play pretty darn well against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, and I feel like that team is going to be the greatest of all time offensively, or what I think they could be for quite a while, at least over a 2 or 3 year stretch, because what Mahomes does, what he's got with Hill, with Kelsey, with even Watkins, Le'Veon Bell now subs in as a backup running back when Edwards-Helaire is hurt. Like, it's the amount of weapons the Chiefs have is insane. I thought the Saints did really well. So to see Hurts tear them apart the week before, there probably is some concern that they didn't have a lot of tape on it or didn't game plan really well, or maybe even took Jalen Hurts a little bit easy. But you still can't just completely write it off what the Saints defense did after watching them, how they played against the Chiefs. And I know you didn't watch that game entirely, but I thought they played really well, the Saints defense did against the Chiefs.
Yeah, watch the Steelers without a lot of game film on Ryan Finley tonight. What happens?
Yes, that's a great example, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be easy for him. They're not taking him that seriously. They're 13-point road favorites. But no, they're going to tear him apart. I agree. I think the Saints team, I mean, it was probably a little, they were a little flat, you know, in that game with the Chiefs coming up, but, it was what it was. And so, I'm bullish as a Giants fan. I'm not happy that he's on their team, but, I'll be drafting him in fantasy. And I started in the stake league. I got about 100. I'm desperate cause I'm close to buying stakes, but I got 150 points. 148 points. I still have Deontay Johnson going tonight. So this is finally my team, had a good outing, partly because it hurts.
Well, it's brutal. I don't know if you've been aware of like the quarterbacks that actually are available in Stake League right now. I'm having to rotate through because Burrow is my starter for quite a while. I guess I could have picked up Matt Ryan. I don't know. Did you see Matt Ryan throwing for almost 300 yards, a couple touchdowns against the Bucs defense? Especially with Julio out.
Their pass defense is bad. Their run defense is tough. I would have seen it, but I would have picked him up if I were desperate, for sure.
All right. Well, I picked up Teddy Bridgewater, who I swear I put in my starting lineup but didn't go in there. So he got like almost 19 points, and I'm like, gosh, oh, my God. All right. So I love Matt Ryan. I ended up going to Dwayne Haskins against the Seahawks.
Oh,
and that worked out okay. He actually got a half point less than Teddy Bridgewater.
Okay. That's fine then. Yeah, you're right. So I don't even want to get into it. I've talked about this on prior podcasts, but my primetime high stakes theme, my quarterbacks at draft were Dak and Burrow. And so I had great quarterbacks, and then I had all these errors, and like Danny Dimes was out like the week I needed him, and then there was a glitch with the software. So same thing with you. Like I needed to switch Baker out in the blizzard for Dimes. Didn't happen. Cost me 18 points. Like every week there was some disaster with the quarterback. Which it doesn't matter because that team, now that I'm in the play, you know, if I'd made the playoffs, it would have been $7,000 or $3,200. Right. So that would have been, I wouldn't have won the whole thing because I have like Kamara.
How's it doing in the consolation though?
It was fourth, and now it's like, I want to say it's 17th.
Okay. Yeah.
But there's a few guys, you know, there's people who have players left in tonight's game, and it's in striking range, but I think it'd be hard. I'd have to get like 200 points the last, you know, next week, I'd have to just kill it with like somebody weird. And like I had Antonio Brown, which is good. And maybe a lot of people don't have him, or I don't know. It's pretty much done. I had hope after the first week, but it's pretty much done.
Yeah. My best ball team we talked about on Friday or whenever we did XM last, my best ball team finally fell down to third place now after Newton and Jarrett Stidham just kept bleeding points at quarterback. Those are the only two guys that are left. And it sucks because I have Tyreek Hill and Derrick Henry and, you know, Darren Waller, and yet I just can't get anything out of the quarterback position, and it's ultimately fault for me. Can we move over to the upset of the day, right? I mean, like, I don't really want to talk about Jets-Rams, but I think we have to because it's almost laughable. The Jets can't even get a win and feel happy about it because now they have fallen into a tie with the Jaguars for the number one overall pick in Trevor Lawrence, you have to imagine. But I'm stunned. I would not have seen the Rams at all. I did pick the Jets to cover the spread just because 17 points is insane. But I had no idea that they would actually win this game.
Well, what's hilarious, and I'm so pissed at myself, is Jeff and I do something called Force the Bet, where we bet the money lines on the NFL games. And the unit is $10. So it's like, you know, the 100, you know, so if it's minus 300, then you'd be risking 30 to win 10. And if it's plus 300, you'd be risking 10 to win 30. And the other guy has to take the other side of it. And you know, it's all true odds because we average the two. Normally, obviously, like the house makes money because it'll be like plus 270 minus 330, meaning you have to risk 330 to win 100. But if you bet 100, you only win 270 on the underdog. And that's the rake. But we just average it and say, okay, it's plus 300, right? Because there's no rake between us. So every bet is basically true odds. You're getting the odds you're supposed to, whether you take a favorite or an underdog. There's no rake. And with the really huge lines, Vegas always kills you. It'll be like minus 2,000 plus 1,000. So in other words, you'll be getting 10 to 1, and you'll have to lay 20 to 1 on one of these crazy things. Well, this one would have been 18 to 1 if I had taken it. And I thought, just for the hell of it, you know, I'll take the Jets at Jeff's, my 10 against Jeff's $180. And I was just going to do it, but then I was like, I'm just throwing away 10 bucks. I'm not going to do this. So I went with the Eagles instead. And damn, if I had done that, Jeff would have had to cough up $180. And that, you know, I was going to do it too as a thing. And so it was so annoying that I just didn't do it because you may as well. They're all true odds, so to speak. So that's crazy. The other thing, you know, so Vegas gave the Rams a 93.75% chance to win the game, implied. So 6.25% that happened. And, you know, 6.25% is not that small, right? You wouldn't get on an airplane with a 93%, 94% chance to reach its destination. You just wouldn't do that. You're not going to risk your life on 94%. But it's still, like, if you think about it, not only was it so unlikely they'd beat the Rams in Los Angeles, but also that, you know, they blew, as you said, they blew the first pick. Jacksonville actually right now is ahead of them because of the, I guess it's like a strength of schedule aggregate that they've played. And the Jets is a little bit weaker than the Jaguars aggregate schedule. So the Jaguars get the first pick. And so it's just like, okay, they just, not only they shocked the world, but they just cost themselves. And then I was trying to figure out how much this would cost, right? So I'm like, if you tell me, Joe, you probably know more college than I do. If I'm a team and I've got 1.2, I'm the Jets, and I decide, you know what, we made a huge mistake winning that game. I really want Trevor Lawrence. What do I have to offer the Jags to get that pick? What kind of package?
Yeah. So you're offering 1.2 to get 1.1. I think if you're the Jags, and who also need a quarterback likely because you're moving on from Gardner Minshew or whatever else, you're probably saying you need to give me a second and a third and something else. Kind of like that the RG3 package that Washington had to pay.
That's two firsts.
I know. Two firsts. But it was like a seven. It was seven picks, right? Like that was from three to seven, I believe, something
right,
like that.
Right, right. It wasn't like from the second pick.
Right.
But what I'm saying is because Trevor Lawrence is this generational prospect, I think you'd have to give – this is my guess, but you tell me if I'm wrong. 1.2 this year, yep. Next year's first, and this year's third.
Yeah. That's something a tough like that. One. I mean, like I could absolutely if you threw in the first next year, you are not overpaying if you're the Jets. I completely understand why.
Right.
But I also
and
think,
a third this year.
Right. I mean, after watching Justin Fields this past Saturday against Northwestern, I'm not sure you can be convinced that he is, you know, that the can't miss prospect that some people are anticipating he would be alongside Trevor Lawrence. And I don't think there's a second quarterback that really has emerged to the same caliber that Lawrence is. So it is possible. Yeah, absolutely. A first round pick next year and a third this year, I could absolutely see it.
Right. So that's what the Jets basically gave up by winning that game. You know, an extra first and a third. You know, we're making this up, obviously, right. But that's ballpark, right? I mean, if you think that's ballpark, I mean, close to it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not totally against it. Like, people were like, it's one thing to, like, play your young guys, which they should, develop everybody,
except
Frank Gore for God knows what reason.
Yeah.
Trade away, you know, veterans, get draft picks. All that stuff's great. But on the field, what they did against the Raiders with the zero, you know, the cover zero or whatever, that's like point shaving, right? And it's shady. And you also don't do it for organizational culture reasons, I think. You know, give up games on purpose as a professional. And so I could actually see a case, even though I know a lot of people disagree with me, that as much as it costs them, obviously the Rams want to win because the Rams are in the thick of seeding for the playoffs.
Yeah.
So you know the Rams are going to try. So, you know, you basically when you try to win, you're taking the risk of winning. You're taking a risk that you might actually win, right? If you try to lose, you don't take the risk.
Sounds, yeah.
Right. So they took a risk, right? Like they tried to win the game, obviously, and they took a risk that they would actually win the game, and they did win the game, and it cost them whatever we said the equivalent of, you know, is. And I think it's still the right way to do it. Even though you say that's so dumb. I mean, who cares about these games? It doesn't matter if you're 1-15 or 0-16. It doesn't matter what your record is. And it doesn't matter what people say. But I wonder as a professional athlete and a competitor, like if you do that, whether that's just the line you just never cross. It doesn't matter what the payoff is. It's not a utilitarian consideration. Mm-hmm. It is a matter of principle as a competitor. You always try. And that you don't cross that line and you don't make exceptions for the greatest pick ever who, you know, you never know. I mean, he could turn out to be Andrew Luck, who was the greatest pick ever. He could turn out to be Jamarcus Russell. Probably not, but you never know.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I think there's two points that I want to discuss from this with you. I don't know if you've made a stance on how you feel for these teams in the playoffs here, but specifically the NFC. I feel like it really is whoever faces another person. There's direct weaknesses for everyone in the NFC. Do you feel like the Rams are now lower on your list of contending teams from the NFC because of this, or is it just any given Sunday, one game?
Any given Sunday. And I wasn't that high in the Rams anyway because I think their offense kind of sucks. Like, I think Goff is very limited. I think Kupp is a good receiver and Woods is a good receiver, but they're not great receivers. And those are their two best. And Higbee's good too. They're all good. And I'm sure Akers or whoever is good, you know, Darrell Henderson, they're okay. But I don't think they're great. And so I think, you know, their defense is pretty good. But I think offense, at least to win multiple games, I think that's – unless you have, like, the Ravens 2000 defense or something anomalously good.
Yeah, or even the Niners last year, which got to the Super Bowl.
Right, but the Niners also had a really good offense too.
True, yep.
Their offense was very good. So unless you have – I just wouldn't want to bet on a team that is that – shaky offensively, and we saw it against the Jets, right? So, but I next week, I don't know who they play, and I don't know what the spread is, and I want to know because I got to guess it first. But I'm almost certainly taking the Rams. I'm almost certainly buying low after that loss.
Okay, that's fair. Like, as a Packers fan, I'm thinking of teams I don't want to face. I'm totally fine facing the Saints, I think, especially in Lambeau. But even if we have to play in the Dome, I think the Packers win that game. I feel confident the Packers could beat the Buccaneers, too. It took a bunch of fluky interceptions that never happened.
Oh, they got killed by the Buccaneers.
I feel completely confident, honestly, that they can beat the Buccaneers. I don't feel good about the Rams. I don't feel good about the Seahawks, and I don't feel good about the Cardinals either. I'm assuming whatever NFC East team makes it in is going to beat the Packers because that's the type of fan
that's how the Packers
with.
Roll.
Yeah, but it's Wisconsin sports in general, so I'm just excluding that. Right. But anybody in the NFC West, I am legitimately afraid of. But the Rams in particular, I think Jalen Ramsey can do as well against Davante Adams as anybody could.
He'll shut Davante Adams down.
The running game is going to be fantastic with Cam Akers against the Packers. I'm worried as a Packers fan about the Rams, and I still am even after this Jets game.
Yeah, I agree with you that you shouldn't change your assessment. I think it is an any given Sunday thing, but the Packers are vulnerable because they can be run over, and the Rams defense can slow down what has been the best offense in football so far. But I actually think, yeah, the Rams may pose a specific threat to the Packers that they wouldn't against a team with a better run defense and of just a better defense. But I still think the Saints are the best team in the conference. And Breeze was really rusty for three quarters, but he looked sharp at the end. And they got to get Michael Thomas back if ever. I mean, Michael Thomas, I mean, what a bust.
Yeah,
I think that their defense is they and the Rams are the two best defenses in the conference. Although the Cardinals defense has played a lot better lately. Mm-hmm. And I think
they're using Isaiah Simmons too, which is crazy to me. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, they're starting to use him a little more. But I think that the Saints are still the best team in the conference.
I don't disagree that the Saints are the best team in the conference, but I do think the Packers specifically are able to attack the weaknesses that the Saints have. And I think their pass defense is susceptible. The Saints are. And I think Aaron Jones can do enough. I think the linebackers aren't quite fast enough to attack the edges where the Packers have been so good at this year. And I'm not worried about the Packers offense against the Saints defense. And that's the advantage that the Saints normally have because it's not Drew Brees. It's not the Saints offense anymore. It's their defense.
Right. It's the defense, yep. It's the defense, offensive line, Kamara, the easy, quick throws. It's controlling the game, really. And I can see that. I mean, the Packers are a very particular kind of team. I think the Chiefs' defense has gotten better this year, but the Packers are like the Chiefs used to be, like this unstoppable offense. But the other problem with the Packers, though, is it's mostly Rodgers. And Davante Adams is a great player, but he's like Travis Kelce more. He's not going to break the game wide open. And even Kelsey's more of a big play guy than Davante Adams. Yeah. So MVS is so inconsistent. And Lazard, I mean, you just don't really have – I mean, Aaron Jones is great. And Davante Adams is really good at what he does. But the Chiefs have this sort of like you can be beating the Chiefs, you know, making them punt, getting pressure on Mahomes. Yep. And all of a sudden, boom, it's like two touchdowns. Like, it's what happened to the Niners at the end of that game.
Yep.
It's like so fast.
Completely agree.
And the Packers, they do that. You know, they have Tanyan catching balls and stuff. But if they get a little stuffed, like against the Bucs, they don't have that guy that you can just be like, all right, screw it. We're going to throw an 80-yard touchdown to Tyreek Hill or Mecole Hardman on one play. You know, and that worries me a little bit. If the going gets rough,
I agree with you that, but I don't think the Saints have that either. I mean, it's just
they don't. They don't.
It's a bunch of dink and dunk, and then you're going to have to be playing outside potentially if you are the number two seed. We'll have to see. I actually think the Packers and I don't know. Am I going to be doing the guess the lines with you with this week?
Tomorrow? You on tomorrow?
No, I'm not. Okay, so I avoid that. I actually think the Packers beat the Titans. I know it's crazy to say Derrick Henry will set the rushing record. I'm confident in that, but I do think the Packers will beat the Titans because the Packers offense is going to be great against the Titans defense. They're miserable.
Well, this is going to be over under should be 80 in this game
I'll take whatever the over is.
Yeah, because neither team can stop anybody and. The one thing the Packers have is a great offensive line, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was what happened against the Bucs. I mean, Rodgers, for the only time this year, was really just under assault, and it was very weird. It was like it was like game five or something, and I was like, oh, I guess that Rodgers resurgence was fake. A guy bought into it. He must have had an easy schedule or something. And really, that was the only bad game he had, a really bad game he had. So I'm a believer. I think the line plus Rodgers – plus a healthy Adams and Jones is a huge floor. But, you know, in the playoffs, you need ceiling too. So we'll see. Getting the home field will be huge.
I thought the Panthers actually took advantage of the Packers offensive line at 5 sacks, I believe. Yep, and it was all interior pressure too, which is tough to see. That's not because you're right. They've played so well for almost all of this year. One other point I want with the Jets Rams is the Jets situation that much worse than the Jacksonville situation? Or you can flip it in a positive way. Is Trevor Lawrence really downgrading that much? Because I was actually putting it together. And once you get rid of Adam Gase, who I imagine is going to be gone at the end of the year.
I don't know.
I think they're pretty similar. I really do.
Well, they both have terrible coaches who should be fired. But I don't know that Gase is going to be fired because, A, why didn't they do it already if they're going to? A lot of other coaches got fired midseason. Mm-hmm. Secondly, remember, he came in before last year and they forced the GM out, who did all the drafting. And so they can say, look, we didn't want Darnold. We didn't want Bell. We didn't want all these guys. Let me build my team. Give me a shot. And then, you know, if it doesn't go well, I don't know that he's going to be fired. Now, he might, you know, I mean, he might, but I'm not positive he's going to be fired. But secondly, at least the Jaguars have, well, I guess the Jets have, some young players.
This is a harder question. Yeah.
They have some young players on the outside. I mean, I'd rather have DJ Chark and the, James Robinson and the nucleus that Jacksonville has. Yeah, Chenault, you know, he's been hurt a bunch, but he's been all right. And then I guess the Jets' defense is better. You know, the core of their defense is probably better than Jacksonville's. But, what's his name? The guy they got in the second round, his name is escaping me, for the Jets this year. Denzel Mims. He showed, like, some flashes when he wasn't hurt. But that's really it. You know, I mean, that's really their only, at least offensive core piece that, you know, Ty Johnson and
Frank Gore. Right.
Yeah. Who's LaMichael Perine. Yeah. I mean, these guys aren't really like, they're just guys. I think, I don't think they're like serious building blocks. So,
the advantage is James Robinson, right? I mean, like, the Jacksonville offensive line stinks. The Jets offensive line stinks. You have receiving core that I think is close. Like, Jameson Crowder's a guy. I think he's a good player. You have Rashad Perriman. Maybe he comes back. You have Denzel Mims. And those three equal to DJ Chark and Chenault, I feel like, is close.
So the difference is those guys are fully priced. Those guys are full price. Jameson Crowder, Rashad Perriman, those are veterans, right?
Like, they've already hit whatever they're going to get to.
Yeah. I mean, not only are they going to hit what they get to, but they're also getting, Crowder signed a free agent deal. Not like they're getting paid so much money, but like, I don't know. I wouldn't count the veterans. I guess you should. Maybe you should. Okay, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt. Keep going. Make your case.
Just the only difference is the James Robinson factor. And then if you imagine, hopefully the Jets don't have to trade to number one overall to get Lawrence or whatever else. But if they keep their second round pick, you're probably drafting a running back. There's a few. The guy from Clemson obviously looks fantastic right now, but you had a breakout game from Damien Harris, I think, or Harris, whatever, the running back for Alabama as well. He had an awesome game too. There's options this year from the Jets' perspective if you want to not have Frank Gore eventually play his 39th season in the NFL.
Leadership factor. Don't underestimate it.
The Jets are going to seriously want to have Frank Gore play with his son. We're 2 years away from that. I don't know if you realize that. We're 2 years away from it.
No, I think you got to think big. You got to think grandson. He's got to play with his grandson. That's what the
it's possible. But the way Frank Gore has been playing, and for as much as you want to talk about it, he did do pretty productive things this past week. So go ahead.
So I'm looking at this. So Mekhi Becton, I don't know what the grade on him is,
he's been a positive this year for them.
Okay, so that's a building block that's bigger than James Robinson or having a running back. I'm looking at. I don't know much about the Jags offensive line. I don't think it's been very good. No. Is there anybody there that's...
They had the high pick in Cam Robinson. He's probably not coming back, or if they are they're going to be overpaying him. So that's... No, their offensive line is not very
good. Juwan Taylor is a second rounder, right tackle, 35th overall last year. I'm looking at some of these guys. I don't know. I don't know what the grades are on these guys, but some of that's going to be a factor. A lot of offensive line play is cohesion and coaching too. And the Jets defensively are probably better, and Quinnen Williams and some of their marquee guys, obviously they traded away Jamal Adams. I don't know. They're both, if you're coming into a new situation, you expect the team to be terrible, right? Usually when coaches get fired, the team's bad. Few people will come into the Anthony Lynn situation of the Chargers where, if he gets fired and you've got Justin Herbert. All of a sudden, you got Joey Bosa, You got Derwin James if he can ever stay healthy, and Casey Hayward. I mean, you got like a loaded team right out of the gate. So that's always rare. Usually you take over a team, it's pretty bad. You get the picks. You have a couple pieces. But, yeah, I mean, they're teardowns pretty much.
Everyone talks about how bad the Jets are, and they have been that bad this year. And I was like, wait a minute. Like, actually, it's closer than you'd think. And the Jets are going to have that late first-round pick where they could go running back instead of second round. But Jacksonville will as well, too, with the Jalen Ramsey deal. They're getting the Rams first-round pick this year. The Jets are getting the Seahawks first-round pick this year. So they're going to be kind of even. It's not as massive of a difference as I think people might first imagine. So we probably only have time for like two or three more games, maybe, if you want to discuss. But is there any other?
We can wrap up in like 5 minutes because we got to get ready for the show and stuff. So just anything else on your mind, Joe, that we don't have to fill up a whole hour.
I mean, the Falcons doing Falcons stuff in the second half was not at all surprising to me. But the fact that they were able to get so far ahead of the Bucs to begin that was shocking to me. And I know Tom Brady threw for a ton of yards, and that's great. Antonio Brown got his touchdown. We have Mike Evans have an appearance, which wasn't all that surprising. I just don't know what to make of the Buccaneers. And that's like the Rams we talked about earlier. I'm also confused with them, but not really, I think. The Buccaneers, it's a different story. I just don't know. Maybe Ronald Jones, when he comes back, is going to make that offense a little bit more different, because they were really gravitating to Tim as the guy. Fournette did nothing in that role, except he scored touchdowns, but otherwise he was just inefficient. I'm
confused. He made a couple all right runs. I watched a little bit of that. He fought for extra yards. He wasn't too bad. But Ronald Jones is the guy. He's better. He's more explosive right now. And, you know, Brady was shaky early and then got into a rhythm and made some nice throws. And they figured out Atlanta always seems to collapse. Matt Ryan watching Brady, you know, take over after a large deficit, just funny. I mean, PTSD probably at this point. But I think they're pretty good. Their pass defense is their real weakness. They got to pass protect, and they got to play pass defense better. And I think teams will light them up. Like, I think the Packers this time, unless they somehow get that pressure again on Rodgers, would light them up. Their back four pretty weak. I mean, the Giants game was, you know, when they almost beat them,
yes,
and Daniel Jones missed a long touchdown to a wide open Darius Slayton. They still scored 23 and were knocking on the door to tie with a 2-point conversion. I was like, oh, this defense isn't that good. They're just really good against the run. And so the teams that can go over top are going to hurt the Bucs. And so, you know, there's not a lot of them, right? The Saints have no deep threats. The Packers, you know, MVS, but he's so erratic. The Rams don't really
go deep. I mean, it's not Tyreek Hill or MVS deep, but he can go deep. I mean, they've proven that time and time again this year.
He can kind of go deep. He's not the guy that's going to he can abuse corners on route running,
yes,
and body control and strength, and he's got good hands, so he can just sort of do what DeAndre Hopkins does. He's kind of like Hopkins, you know. Yeah. They're very technicians. But if you want to talk about like punishing a defense that can't, you know, lets players get behind them, that's, you know, that's not his game really. You know, he's a short pass catcher. I mean, a medium. He's not Michael Thomas. He's a little bit more depth of target than that, but he's not a downfield guy. Not saying that's the only thing you need, but it seems like the Bucs, that's what's going to kill them. And trying to think of the teams that are in the playoffs in the NFC that even have guys like that. The Seahawks. He's the ultimate. I mean, DK Metcalf is like the ultimate of that. That's what he does. He just tortures people. Tyreek Hill. Terry McLaurin does it. He just says I'm a quarterback.
Right. Yeah. The other part that sunk me, so I was in 5 playoff leagues, now down to 3 after today, more than likely. I had Ezekiel Elliott in a number of different places, and I was convinced I'm going to bench him, whether it be for Mike Davis against the Packers, J.K. Dobbins as well. I'm going to bench Ezekiel Elliott. But everywhere, I also had Tony Pollard as the backup. So my thought was, okay, I'm not playing Ezekiel Elliott regardless if he's healthy. So the same thought should apply to Tony Pollard. I was wrong. I was an idiot. And that's going to cost me in at least one of those leagues, and I'm kind of frustrated about it. Is there any way you could talk me off the cliff on this one?
I should just jump. I mean, if I made a mistake like that, I wouldn't forgive myself. And knowing that, especially as young as you are, Joe, it's a long life to have that regret. Yeah, so it's just
going to be holding on to forever.
Exactly. No, I actually drafted Pollard in a few leagues and dropped him because once Dak got hurt, I was like, this offense sucks. Why am I holding on to the backup to the Cowboys? So it was a similar reasoning. You're like, I don't like the starter. Why do I like the backup? It's you know, these guys suck. So yeah, it is what it is. I mean, you know, as long as you have. Who did you start over him? Someone good?
J.K. Dobbins, I started over. Who did fine enough? Okay. But I mean, that's 20-point
right.
difference. And then
and who else?
Mike Davis in the NFFC league that I'm doing. It was an auction league, and I really needed those points. It's going to be now way too close when I had a pretty substantial lead this past week in the aggregate total of overall. That one hurts. But I still feel like that was the right choice. I was always going to start Mike Davis against the Packers just because Pollard goes for 30 points. It doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's the wrong choice because it didn't pan out.
Right.
But what you're trying to say is, did I have good process? And it's always a conceit to say, oh, my process is great. I just got it wrong this time. Because really long-term results are the only point of having a process. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's sort of like the long-term results matter, but this is a short-term result. But the problem with the short-term result is sometimes in the playoffs it has an outsized impact. But I don't think you should feel that bad. I'll say you should feel upset about the result. But I don't think you
– How bad I think should I feel? 54%?
You should feel like – I think you should feel like – 46% bad, 54%
in a couple of minutes. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah. 54%, you know, is just sort of bad luck.
East Coast offense. What do you got for us for tomorrow?
Well, it's going to be your favorite article, the team I wish I had drafted. Yeah. I haven't decided yet how absurd I want to go, but hopefully the more absurd, the better.
I'm looking forward to it. That's always my favorite one every single week. So I appreciate you popping on the show with me today, filling in for Jeff. This is good. Got to get to SiriusXM, but I'm happy we were able to do this today. I'll be on tomorrow with Jake Letarski to do the free agent recap. I don't know if we have a show for Wednesday. I think we do not. And I'm not positive on the Thursday deal. Obviously, it's Christmas Day. But to everyone listening out there, happy holidays. Stay safe. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.